Dear mother and sisters, God made man divine in nature. God is spirit, and we are spirit in man. Therefore it is said, know ye not that you are the true temple of God. The body that you are carrying, it is the true temple of God, because Holy Ghost resides in it. Then who you are but the spirit in man? If spirit is eternal, why we fear that we will die? So great is man. All masters are referred to it. We are of the same essence as that of God. Dear brothers and sisters, God made man divine in nature. God is spirit, and we are spirit in man. Therefore it is said, know ye not that you are the true temple of God. The body that you are carrying, it is the true temple of God, because Holy Ghost resides in it. Then who you are but the spirit in man? If spirit is eternal, why we fear that we will die? So great is man. All masters are referred to it. We are of the same essence as that of God. We have been given this man body to enable us just realize that spirit or God which is already in us. But that will be done only when we know ourselves. God is light. When he wanted the world should come up, then there was light. And that light comes within each of us. So all masters have been saying like that. Take heed that the light within you is not darkness. So soul is of the same essence as that of God. And the light of spirit shineth in darkness, that means body, and the darkness apprehended it not. So we are great in man, that's the point. All masters tell us like that. Our true home is not this man body that has been given to us. It is a golden opportunity, of course, we have had. Ever since we were separated from God, so far we have not reached back our home. The point is, because now we are identified with the body darkness, so much so that we never dream of whether the light is within us or not. So and for that account, on that account only, we are not happy. Had we known the Spirit in us, we are of the same divine nature as the God Himself. Had we known that, then as such we are all equal. God has given us the same privileges, even physically, born the same way, outer inner construction the same divine Spirit within us, but being under control of mind, we are identified with the body and all outside world so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. So Master come out to tell us that you are Spirit in man, God is light, and that light dwelleth in each one of us. As such, we are all children of light, brothers and sisters in God. Physically also, spiritually also, and intellectually also, we are in the same privilege of God. So Masters come up, they want to make us realize who you are, what you are. They say you are conscious entities, top of the ocean of all consciousness. But environment by mind and matter so much so that you've forgotten yourself. So they tell us, O man, know thyself, who you are, what you are. We have the body, of course. We have got the intellect, no doubt. But we have them, we are conscious entities. If we know by self-analysis, by rising of our body consciousness, then we'll find we are of the same nature as that of God. We are Spirit in man, we are of the same essence as that of God. Only being identified in the world, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. A saint told us, O man, you have committed a heinous crime against your own self. And people ask him, how? He says, you are the indweller of the body, you are the Holy Ghost. You are the children of light. But that you have simply got the man body to enable you to realize yourself and to realize God, but you have been identified with it, yet you are just forgotten yourself. So for that, Masters come and tell us, please look to your Godhead. You are princes of God, you are micro-gods, invited by mind and matter, just growing on the earth like anything. So Masters make us realize, when they give us all this theory and teachings, then when we realize, they give us a little demonstration also of that, how to rise above body consciousness. Then we naturally pray, O God, you are in the high heavens, and we are here growing in the man body, in the earth. How can we reach me? So when this is the arising from within, then the God who is there, He is us, He is with us, He is never without us. He makes some arrangement to send somebody who can make us realize who we are and what we are. So Masters, when they came, they solved this mystery of life, and they made us also realize that thing by giving us a demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness, how to know ourselves. So all Masters from the East and the West all gave up the same thing. philosophers, Latin philosophers, Persian philosophers, all saints of the East said the same thing, of course in their own language. So this is the first step. We can proceed on the way back to God. So for that reason, Master come and make us realize who we are writing by giving the demonstration of it. Because we do not realize unless we see things with our own eyes. So they say, what is this sign? These religions came into being after that. So after when they left the scene, they were made only for the purpose that their teachings may be, remain alive. And many people may derive benefit from that, of how to know oneself and to know God. So as long as they are practical people, the purpose are served. For want of practical people, these formations dwindle down into stagnation, and stagnation is in deterioration. Then things come up again, well, man, look at yourself. You are taken up these labels of the man body. These are only to show in which school you are giant, to know yourself, to know your divine nature. So these religions were made for the man. Man was not made for the religions, he had to make the best use of it. That school is better who turn out perfect man. So Master come up to revive how to know ourselves, practically, who we are, what is our connection with the body, whether we can rise above body consciousness. So you'll find what is spirituality. Spirituality is not the customs or rituals or performances that you perform at the level of the senses. They have got exalted side. That is only meant for preparation of the ground to know oneself and to know God. That is not spirituality, that is the ground on which building of spirituality can be raised. But true spirituality, what? To know the spirit in man. Spirituality means the quality of spirit, to know yourself, that you are spirit in man. It is purely a knowledge of self-analysis. To know oneself and to know the Overself and know God by practical self-analysis, by sitting at the feet of some adept in that way, which are called masters, and give you a demonstration of that. To know oneself, to know the spirit in man, know the name God into expression power, which is controlling the whole universe and all, and permeating all creation, and which is the controlling power of us in the body too. To know that, that is called spirituality. Don't confound it with this spiritualism, which is only a contact with the groaning spirits, those who have left the body and grounded on the earth. A contact with that, that is no spirituality. Further, spirituality, no spiritualism, that's also contact with the souls which have left the world, and they are little higher than those spirits growing from the earth. To contact with that also, that is no spirituality. If you contact with them, they will give you only up to the level they progressed on the way. They are not more than one where he has been leaving the body. So it is also no hypnotism to hypnotize us by radiation, nor it is mesmerism. So it is purely a matter of self-analysis, knowing oneself and knowing. knowing the spirit in man. People confound it with other things. So when we know ourselves, what do we know? That we are the living, we are who are in the man body, the factory of the man body. Suppose there's a factory outside which is run by powerhouse. They've got so many departments of the factory. Each department has a link with the powerhouse. So they are working. When you want to stop any department of the factory, we take up that link from that department, and that department needs to work. If you want to stop the whole factory, take up the main link, and the whole factory starts. Similar, this body is working. We are going around playing this and that thing. When that connection taken up, body is inert. Machine lies intact. Everything is there, but the driver is gone. And that power that keeps on the body, that is we don't. So body works as long as we are in the body. And we are in the body, you know, as long as some power is controlling us in the body. So similarly in this man body, when masters come, they give us a demonstration of knowing ourselves, how to rise above body consciousness by self-analysis. Then we see it is on account of we, this active work. Now, what has happened now, that our soul is under the control of mind, mind is under the control of outgoing faculty, and outgoing faculty is driven like anything from the outer environment. We are who gives strength to the man, to the mind, to the body, to the outgoing faculty. Instead of that, they are dragging us. The whole thing is topsy-turvy. The horse had to carry the carriage, and the carriage is put before the horse. So master this thing gave us a demonstration into it. Then we know such a man who has risen above body consciousness and known himself and has come in contact with God, that he knows which outgoing faculty likes to work. He's not driven like anything. That's the difference between an average man and the man who has risen above body consciousness at will. He knows himself what he is, and he further knows that higher power that is controlling us in the body and controlling all universe. So he may be his eyes open, not seeing, because his attention is not there. With his ears open, he may not be hearing. So it is all the feet of this, what we call attention, thought. So the sotar attention is directed in the man body or to the different outgoing faculties, they work, and when that is not along with them, they don't work. Those who know by the grace of the God in men to rise above body consciousness, say 100 times a day at will, their angular vision is changed. They see the world in some other light. They say, we are the driver of this man body. It is on account of all in the world they are going. So masters come up and they give us a constant realizer that they use the doubt of the ocean of calm. So as such, you will find you are all equally situated by God. No high, no low. As man body also, as intellectual way, the same thing. With all these advancements of physical and intellectual ways, we are not happy because the third side we have ignored altogether. When they see like that, they see we are all of the same essence of God, we are all brothers and sisters in God, and we worship the same God power into expression power which is controlling us in the body. So, the objective of all religions is what? The object of all deals is divine beatitude and beatification of God. One. And to turn out ideal men. The schools are there, you see. They are meant to turn out successful students to have highest degrees. Whichever school turns out more men like that, students like that, they are creditable. If the schools are there, very big halls, good playing grounds, good dresses of the students, but no student comes out successful. So Master said that there were two objects of the religion on there. One, objective religion is divine beatitude and beatification of God. And the other thing, to turn out ideal men. So there are hundreds and thousands of people in all religions whose main purpose is to know God. Although I've forgotten, that's another thing. Master come to revive that forgotten lesson they want to again put before them. Oh man, go, don't be misguided. The highest aim that you can attain in man body is to know God. And in no other body. So man body is the golden opportunity that we have got, in which we can know God. So two things I told you, all masters say like that. So, to turn out what you say, perfect man is our idea. Be perfect as the Father is in heaven, is perfect. Similarly, man and God are fully embedded in each other. If therefore behoves man to reflect the light of God around him, God is soul of his soul, and his body is the veritable temple of God. Man is embodied truth, but truth is his very life. Without the light of truth, how can man live? When death is without, man has to leave the body. So God speaks to a human pole. Without such a pole, how can we know ourselves? How can God express himself to the world? So we need somebody who has that life and can give us an experience of that life within us. So all masters have been coming again and again to revive to this very subject which we have forgotten, the highest aim of man body. Hazrat Attar, the saint, tells us, O man, thou art the very center of creation. In fact, the very macrocosm and the microcosm. Man is wonderful house we live in, you see. Macrocosm has three planes, physical, astral and causal. And we have also been given three planes and to cross it. We have been given body to work, you know, in the physical world, in the physical world, in the physical body. At the time of death, the physical is shaken off body, we rise into astral body, and astral world is there, then the causal world is there. And beyond all these three, the safest to whom the Father, by degrees. So he tells us, thou art the living book of God, wherein through thee alone God speaks and reveals himself. God does not speak from heaven directly, see? He speaks through the man. If man were to take care of his godhood and make it a practical work, it is a principle, the world will become a heaven on earth. It will become a real places of the pure. So the only ideal for man is to be perfect and complete. Saint Paul said, you are complete in Godhood. I am quoting all these things to let you know what the scriptures tell us. We belong to those religions. We do not know what our scriptures say. We are great in man. So, where is religion in giants, the worship of perfect men too, who are at one with God? Amongst the six, they are supposed to turn to khalsa. Khalsa means pure. And the definition is given, he is the khalsa, pure man, in whom God's light is effulgent. Whole light is effulgent. Similarly, you will find in the Mohammedans, those who want to become Mohammedans, who see the light of God. In Hinduism also, the light candles outside, and also to light the candle with. And Christian also sees the light of God, taking that the light within you is not darkness. So all have got the same degree, but we have forgotten. So that is why Master comes from time to time to revise us, to distort which we have forgotten. All other bodies of this creation has been made subservient to man. God, man is considered to be the next to God. When the angels bow down, are to bow down before the man body. To Ruskin, likewise expresses the same truth. He says, there is no wealth but life. We are worship of light, of life. If life is empty, who cares for the man body? If the lamp is, I got no eyes, no wick, no sense, who cares for the lamp? If the bulb is fused, who cares for the bulb? So there is no wealth but life, life including all its powers of love, peace and admiration. The country is the richest, which nourishes the greatest number of noble and happy human beings. The country is the richest. That man is the richest who, having perfected the function of his own life to the utmost, has also the widest helpful influence, both permeating and by means of the possession of the other's life. So such like worship of such men is given up by all scriptures. Naturally, he commands to say. So we have got. So this science, to know oneself, we are spiritual man, we are eternal, never die, man's body has been given the golden opportunity in which we can realize that. So this practical subject is God's spirituality. Not only having the labels of one religion or the other, that makes no difference. So Master tells us always, the knowledge of all knowledge is what? To know oneself. The Persian philosophers tell us. We have dwelt physically, of course, and intellectually, and not spiritually. O seekers after God, you have lost Him in the very worldly of the sense. We are given up, identified with the senses outside. So much so that we have forgotten ourselves, who we are, what we are. So the world religion means what? To bind, reams back, lead you to bind one back to God. And the word yoga also means the same. Yoga means, comes from the root yuj, means unite. Unite us with God. So fortunately, together do the two dwell in close association in the same abode, in the same body. And strange enough, but as it may seem, the two have never conversed with each other. We are also in the body, and the power which controls us in the body is also there, but strange enough, we have never thought of that. And we go around seeking anniversaries. Kabir said, I went to pay pilgrimage to Makkah. On the way, God met me and rebuked me. Who told you I'm there? I'm with you. On the very life of you. So all masters tell us like that. They say you and that God power is both within this man body. And where are you? You are just identified with your world outside. Why don't you withdraw your attention from outside? He is waiting for you within you. So it is hold the feet of attention. This is attention is what? It drops the ocean of all attention. You are great in man. You can work wonders. If you put in that attention, your body you become physically strong. Wrestlers, you know, when you exercise, they put the whole attention in the body. If you put in your attention to the centers of the brain within you, you become intellectually strong. So this is the whole feat of attention, you see. And Master says, look here, you and God both are lying in the same bed. You are sleeping, awake outside. Why not sleep outside and awake? He's waiting for you. So religion, in fact, what it is, it's a way back to God. That's all. Nothing else. And we have considered to be something else. Religion, in fact, is a way back to God, or a link, linking the soul with God, the old. That religion is blessed, it turns out such like that. Pity it is that we have forgotten what our scriptures say. As long as there are practical people knew the ideal before them, and they also were competent to give them some demonstration of that, how to know oneself, to know God. For want of them, the same good old custom corrupted itself, as I told you before. And ever since this paid preaching has started in all regions, have cut them down. Blind leads you blind and both falls in the ditch. I'm not quoting you somewhere else. From the scriptures I've quoted. That are our scriptures. So we are fortunate in the 20th century that we have got scriptures. All masters who came the past so far. So there is hardly now a man to tell us how to rise above body God. In all regions you find. They preach outward things, customs, rituals, how to maintain, say prayers, this and that, this is all to first step. If a man does not remain in any ism, then there will be corruption. So man is a social being, he must remain in some social body. But to remain therein, we should rise above them and see what is the basic teaching of all religions. And basic teaching of all religions is said, what I am quoting you. So spirituality is another name of, I may say, Surya Yoga. What is Surya Yoga, you know? It is just, spiritual life consists in peeling off layer by layer, the various koshas or sheets, physical, astral, and causal, until it shines forth in its pristine splendor, self-luminosity. God is light, all she is secured is full light. Who sees the full light is the Khalsa, is the true Hindu, is the true Mohammedan, is the true Christian.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang from Master Kirpal Singh. This morning our reader is Barbara Ann Grimes. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am.
Okay, carry on.
Good morning. Continuing on with Master's book, A Great Saint, Baba Jamal Singh, His Life and Teachings. Baba Jamal Singh's Master Swamiji has passed away, and he, Baba Jamal Singh, has been residing at Bayas for some time now, where he's been giving discourses on the path of the Masters. Babaji's grace flow to all. It was not only his disciples who benefited from him, but many others who merely happened to catch his eye by their simplicity, purity, and selfless service. He had read many a scripture in his childhood and youth, but he spoke not from learning, but from direct inner experience. There was inexplicable sweetness and charm in what he said, and an irresistible sense of conviction and assurance. Once, four great pundits who dabbled in various yogic practices began wrangling and debating about the nature of the inner planes. They based themselves on their spiritual study, and the controversy they waged was lively indeed. Hearing of a Jat saint of great attainment, they came to Babaji's door. He heard what they had to say and then lucidly explained to them the nature of the spiritual regions, reconciling what appeared to be contradictory viewpoints and resolving all their doubts to their satisfaction. The pundits went away, but one of them, a true seeker who had caught the saint's bait, returned and begged for initiation. The boon was granted. He practiced his sadhanas with regularity, but to little avail. "Ah, sir, bless me with some inner vision," he begged. "Do you think I do not wish you well?" came the reply. "I wish to the Lord that you reach Satluk this day, but you are not yet ripe and would not be able to bear the strain." The prayer was repeated many a time, but Babaji always gave the same answer. One day, while he was going alone to collect his pension, the pundit met him at a lonely spot. "Sir, this is wilderness, and no one is by. Bless me now, at least give me a glimpse of the realms within, no more, that I may rest in certainty." "You will not be able to stand it, and the strain will be too much for you." "What does it matter even if I lose my life, if only I may see what is within?" Babaji could refuse no longer. He asked the pundit to sit down in meditation and focused his gaze upon him. The pundit's soul was forcibly drawn up into the higher realms. When Babaji, by his own will, brought it down to physical consciousness, the pundit fell sobbing at his feet. "I thought my life was being wrenched out of me and a million lightnings fell upon my head. Oh, sir, forgive me my foolishness. We mortals are indeed unworthy." "What have I to forgive?" replied the sage. "It is you who must forgive yourself, for it is not I who suffered. Now go and make the most of your time, for you have only 3 more years to live." From that day onward, the pundit concentrated on his meditations, and 3 years later, as predicted, passed away. Such tales, however legion, and whole volumes would not suffice to sing the glory and grace of a true saint. So, passing them by, we will concern ourselves with the most important single event in the annals of Babaji's divine ministry, the initiation of Sawan Singh Ji, who was later to carry on his mission. The story is told by the great disciple himself, and we quote from his letters, which have been published in Spiritual Gems, Bias, 1959. "I was fond of satsang and paramat, spirituality, from my very childhood. I often associated with sadhus and religious people, and this in part was because my father was fond of sadhu seva. Then, while in service, I studied Vedanta and discussed Vedanta with people, especially with the sadhus, who on their way to Kashmir stayed at the rest house near my house. Later, I was transferred to Muri Hills. One day, as I was supervising my work, I saw an old Sikh going up a hill along with a middle-aged lady. When I noticed him, I thought he had probably come in connection with some case in the commissioner's court. Little did I think he was to be my master. He was no other than Babaji himself, and the lady was Bibi Ruko. This I did not know at the time, but found out later that Babaji said to Bibi Ruko, referring to me, "It is for his sake that we have come here." To which Bibi Ruko replied, "But he has not even greeted you." Babaji said to her, "What does the poor fellow know yet? On the fourth day from this, he will come to us." On the fourth day, I went to attend satsang, and Babaji was at that time explaining the meaning of Japji Sahib. Well, I started my volley of questions, so much so that the audience got tired and began to feel restless at the large number of questions I had put. The sacred book Sarbachan was lying there, and I objected to the name of Radhaswami, and Babaji explained from the book itself what Radhaswami meant. Radha is the name of the first or primal ray of Surat, consciousness. Swami is the original source of the stream of Shabd. Now he wanted to point out the way, but I had read Vedanta. When I read Gurbani, my opinion was different. When I read Gita, my opinion was again different, and I was unable to come to a decision. At last, I applied for 8 days' leave to enable me to study the teachings of Babaji. He advised me to read Kabir Sahib's Anurag Sehgar. I immediately ordered 8 copies of this book from Bombay so that I could also give some to my friends, Baba Hari Rum, Gulab Singh, etc., to read and comment on it. After several conferences with Babaji, I was thoroughly convinced and received initiation from him on the 15th day of October in 1894. What follows is a moving tale of devotion and obedience on the one hand, and ineffable love and grace on the other. The letters exchanged between the master and the disciple catch something of the esoteric beauty of this tale, and Babaji's epistles were reproduced in the already mentioned volume of Spiritual Gems. In these, we learn of the step-by-step guidance afforded by the Guru to the disciple who has surrendered himself politely, completely to his will, and the bizarre and miraculous way in which his protective hand helps him at every turn. There were 2 particular incidents that Baba Sawan Singh was particularly fond of relating to his audiences to exemplify the greatness of Babaji and the blessing of having a Puran Guru, or true master. We quote again from his letters. 1. It was my habit to catch hold of the mane of my horse and jump upon it while it was going by. But my servant, in my absence and without my knowledge, had cut the horse's mane. I did not notice that, and as I grabbed for the mane, my hand slipped, and I fell down and broke my leg. The fracture was painful, no doubt, but much more painful was the fact that I could neither defecate nor urinate, and the doctors even thought it might be difficult for me to survive. A Mohammedan overseer belonging to my district, coming to know of this accident, came to me and said, "I am your own man, a sort of family member, and I belong to your place. Tell me, please, how can I help you?" I said, "My children are studying as boarders in a school about 8 miles from this place, and I do not want them to know of this accident, but I should like you to send a telegram to Maharajibi, Babaji." He sent the telegram, and when Babaji received the telegram, he said, "Well, if the master wants to take him away, he may, for at least he has got an arm. But my sister in faith, Bibi Ruko, pleaded with me for Babaji." It was Babaji's practice to sit in meditation or to go into meditation when there was expectation of anything important happening, and then to give out whatever information he received within. He sat in meditation at 8 p.m. or earlier, whenever the information was received by telegram, and at about 8:03 a.m., he called Bibi Rupa, and she asked, "Shall I bring your food now?" He had not taken his evening meal, and Babaji replied, "No, but you asked something about Bhai Sawan Singh. Now you can inform Sawan Singh that he is not going, but the karmas were very heavy. It was ordained that he had to suffer for 5 years, but now we will settle the karmas in 5 months. Is it not something? We shall not go to him just now, but after he has been discharged from the hospital. In the meantime, you may acknowledge receipt of his telegram." And the moment Babaji's telegram was received, I could pass stools and urine. Saints show their mercy, but they never talk about it. Now, while I was reduced to this condition, I had to suffer from the monetary point of view also. I lost my subdivisional allowance, my horse allowance, and half my pay also. The chief engineer was very kind to me. He said, "If only you could come to the office every day in a sedan chair, I would consider you on duty." But I was very doubtful and feared that, my leg being still weak, I might slip and have another accident. The chief engineer thereupon allowed me 1 month's leave. I wondered if I would be fit to work after 1 month. The next morning, I saw the commanding engineer, and he said, "Now you are going for only 1 month." Prior to this, Babaji came to see me and told me that I would be absent from duty for only 1 more month, but it was hard for me to believe it. At last, the month passed, and a letter received from Babaji stating, "We people have not come into this world to do our own work. We have come here by the orders of Maharaji Swamiji. If he likes, he will get the work out of us." It's impossible to describe the reach or the power of the saints. I am sure if the Guru wants, he can make even the stones to carry out his work. 2. Babaji used to be very kind to me, and whenever I came to visit him, he would give me a place in his own room. Once I got down from the Baya station at 12 o'clock at noon. It was very hot, and I sat down under a tree for a while, and then I felt that I had come for Babaji's darshan, yet here I was seeking comfort and delaying that meeting with the beloved. Even worldly lovers have done much better. The thought troubled me. So I started on foot from the station to the Dera. At the Dera, Babaji, who was very sensitive to heat, came out and began to pace the open courtyard before his room. Bibi Rupa remonstrated and requested him to go inside his room out of the hot sun, but he would not. A few minutes before I reached the Dera, he went in, and then Bibi Rupa, seeing me coming, exclaimed, "Now I see why Babaji was walking in the hot sun. He had himself absorbed some of that extreme heat so that I would not be overcome by it on the way." There are so many wonderful things about Babaji that if I go on relating them for 100 years, it would not be possible to finish them all. Indeed, 100 years would not suffice. So we will cover as swiftly as possible the rest of the story of Babaji's earthly sojourn. An ever-increasing number of visitors flocked to his hut at Bayas, and his words to Bibi Rupa, "Here shall rise one day an ever-growing city, and many a house and bungalow shall be built. And no less the words of God-intoxicated Kahan, at whom the people had laughed, I collect these brooks and these bricks for the town that shall be here built, began at last to seem meaningful. Babaji spent the greater part of his time at Bayas, but he often went on tour to neighboring areas or to towns further off to minister to the spiritual needs of his votaries. And once, when he was at Ambala, at the behest of some disciples, Hukam Singh, a friend of his devoted disciple Moti Ram, a tailor who worked for the British regiment stationed there, applied for initiation. Babaji refused to grant his request. Hukam Jing approached his friend, who in turn approached Babaji, but to no avail. He's not yet fit for the path, the sage observed, but Moti Ram was not to be put off. He pleaded again and again for the case of his friend. I've told you before, his karmas don't permit it, so what can I do in the matter? Oh, Holy One, all the more reason you should take pity on him, for if you don't, who will? Moti Ram, do not press me further. I would rather initiate 400 others than this friend of yours. A saint cannot refuse a devoted disciple for long, and would even pass through fire for his sake. When Moti Ram repeatedly pressed, he gave way, adding, But as soon as I have initiated your friend, I shall not spend another moment here, but proceed straight home. True to his word, Babaji, as soon as the instructions were over, packed his scanty belongings and entrained for Bayas. Whoever expressed a desire to follow him there was told to come 2 weeks later. On reaching his hut, he lay down in bed, and when local visitors came to see him, they were in consternation, for they found him in the grip of a deadly fever. Doctors and medicines were sent for, but Babaji would take nothing. About a fortnight later, the fever subsided, and when Moti Ram received the news, he hastened to see him, and he begged forgiveness. Sir, if only I had known what it was to mean for you, I would not, for the kingdom of three worlds, have pressed to initiate my friend. Babaji was in a communicative mood and revealed, so heavy were the karmas of Hukam Singh that, but for the intercession, he would, for the next 7 lives, have passed through the most trying sufferings and ordeals. Moti Ram humbly thanked him for his unfathomable grace, but Babaji, true to his innate humility, simply replied, Such was the will of the Lord. The grace of Babaji radiated like the life-giving sun to those who came in touch with him. Baba Sawan Singh, however, as we have already seen, was the object of his special adoration. The years from 1894 to 1903 were marked by regular visits to Bayas by Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj, which were occasionally returned by Babaji. The sage called his favorite disciple by the name of Babuji. He had told Bibi Ruko that the handsome government officer would one day be his successor. On one occasion, which in an extraordinarily gracious mood, he turned to his Guru Mukh and remarked, You and I have come for the good of mankind. Sawan Singh replied, You, of course, have come for humanity's uplift, but I myself am only an erring mortal. Babaji repeated what he had said, and Sawan Singh made the same reply. Babaji then, raising his eyebrows, said in a louder tone, Babuji, I am speaking to you. We both have come for the good of mankind. Sawan Singh sat mute and silent. At another time, the Bea Saint told his disciple, I have had to toil very hard for my attainment, yet have kept my treasures locked and have never displayed them. But my labors shall bear fruit, and he who shall inherit my mantle shall be known far and wide. The days passed, and Beas became a luminous center on the spiritual map of the world. He who had never agreed to the building of halls and houses at the instance of his beloved Babaji finally relented, and a well was sunk, and a satsang hall built during his last years. Why erect any buildings here when the river may wash them off, he had protested. But Sawan Singh was not to be dissuaded. Even if you can deliver a single discourse, the structure collapses immediately after. I will consider my labors richly rewarded. Meanwhile, the last days of the Jat Guru, as he humorously styled himself, was drawing to a close. And 6 months before his death, he had told his disciples of the approaching end. On hearing of the passing away of Karam Singh at Aitak, he remarked, I used to meet him at Delhi, a great soul indeed, but he will have to be born once again for full liberation, not having practiced Nam in this life. Well, well, my work is also drawing to a close, and I too shall soon be gone. The last days saw many pilgrims at Beas. The sage, who once had passed both night and day lost in meditation, was now day and night in the service of his devotees. He would hardly rest for 3 or 4 hours, spending the rest of the day in meeting those who sought him out, attending to their problems, and goading them to greater and even greater spiritual effort. The gates of divine grace were flung open, and those that sat by him in his room during the days immediately preceding his departure would be inwardly buoyed up and wrapped in samadhi. The construction of the satsang hall had by now been completed, and everyone pressed Babaji to deliver a discourse. He, however, remonstrated, No, no, the will of God is otherwise. He who is to succeed me shall address you there. Bibhiruka was equally adamant, We shall, of course, hear him when his time comes, but now, while you are here, let us have the benefit of your presence. But Babaji insisted, The will of God is otherwise. Besides, I wish Babaji to discourse to all present during my own lifetime, so that there should be no disputes later. But the audience had gathered and pleaded that he himself should speak. Bibhiruka begged and implored, and he at last moved forward. But after climbing up a step or two, he once again stopped and repeated what he had said. To the amazement of all who entered the satsang hall, Babaji's Gurumukh son, Hazu Sawan Singh Ji, was seen sitting at the dais. The last day finally arrived. All the close disciples stood by in anxious expectation. It was the 29th of December, 1903, and a cold and piercing breeze blew over from the waters of the Beas. Babaji seemed to be waiting, and he cast restless glances at the door. At last, a police officer arrived and sought for initiation. It is for you I have been waiting, replied the great saint, and without further ado began explaining the theory and practice of the Surachab Joka. Soon after the instructions were over, he lay down and, closing his eyes, cast off this muddy vesture of decay. Thus passed away one of the greatest of modern saints, whose life was a lesson in humility and love. He had studied at no schools or universities, but had delved deep into the Book of Life. He had read as a child the scriptures of many a faith and had clearly practiced many sadhanas or spiritual exercises. By the age of 18, when other men have hardly attained mental maturity, he had already won the crown of life denied to the most rigorous of yogis and the most industrious of learned men. And yet, the rest of his years were passed in the most perfect humility, his only ambition being to serve his master and carry his message as best he could. In his last recorded words, he is reported to have said, "All my life I have sought only to serve my master, and now whatever work he had to accomplish through this poor physical frame is over." And his very last hour was spent in this service. He more than exemplified what he had once written to his future successor: "Saints are born not for themselves, but for the liberation of mankind." He spoke from inner experience and not from books. He initiated about 3,000 souls, while the number of those who unconsciously benefited by his influence is beyond enumeration. Could one discover another so selfless, so ready to suffer vicariously for the sins of others, so boundless in his love, and so unconcerned with outer differences of sex and creeds? If one searched one's memory, there was perhaps one name that came most readily to mind, that of Nanak. And was it mere coincidence that the soldier saint of Beas was born in the very district, Gurdaspur, in which the great medieval saint, according to his constant companion and biographer Bhai Bala, had prophesied that he would reappear in some future age in a Jat home? Babaji's disciples did not fail to note the resemblance even during his lifetime, and once questioned him on the subject. The sage smiled mysteriously and dismissed the question. But a few minutes later, he casually remarked, "If we spirits were to speak our minds, who would allow us a moment's rest, and who would spare our skins?" So ends the first part of the book, A Great Saint, Baba Jaimal Singh, His Life and Teachings. Thank you, Master, for this satsang.
Thank you, Barbara Ann, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today there were 68 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.